Welcome back. This is episode number 3 of Fat Newborns, Infants, and Kids. Remember, this is an audiobook in paperback book, which you can purchase at kellygregg.com or on Amazon. Let us look back at the Dutch famine. We now realize that the children exposed in utero to the famine did not have mutations, but rather epigenetic changes. These epigenetic marks were permanent. The marks were different depending on what part of the gestation was the exposure to the famine. After fertilization, but before implantation, the fertilized cell is undergoing cleavage and is not attached to the mother. There is not a placenta. We can see epigenetic changes begin right around the morular state when the mesoderm, ectoderm, and endoderm appear. Something caused the DNA to begin expressing itself differently, such that the cells were not totipotent. We do not know what, but it could be related to the cellular environment in the fallopian tubes or uterus, or perhaps some type of timing mechanism. When the egg implants into the endometrium and the placenta is present, the cells are now directly exposed to the maternal blood environment. This occurs about 9 days after fertilization. We all are aware that now the fetus begins growing rapidly and developing all the various structures in the human body, such that by the end of the first trimester, we can identify almost all the organs. During the first trimester, the fetal environment varies markedly, just as the maternal environment is changing. If the mother has high glucose, so do the cells in the fetus. Cells in the fetus are undergoing remarkable epigenetic changes, and the cells are subspecializing all over the place. Recall, the DNA has not changed at all, but now it is being expressed differently in many different cell types. Even before we knew anything about epigenetics, we knew that exposure or lack of exposure to various chemicals, drugs, or nutrients could cause harm to the fetus. The pregnancy itself changes the dietary desires of the mother to provide a suitable nutrient environment to get a healthy baby. We figured this out over thousands of years in various cultures just through observation. We examine the famine as a demonstration of the significance of early nutrition on the epigenetic changes that can be inherited for a lifetime, including the propensity to be thin or obese later in life. Why people become obese is mainly related to diet, but now we also suspect the early fetal environment is a factor. We can see this demonstrated in the Dutch famine, but have been aware of the relationship between obese mothers and obese children later in life. The number of obese pregnant women has been increasing along with the rate of obesity in general. The prevalence of pre-pregnancy obesity increased 70% in 10 years from 1993 till 2003. It has continued to rise. We already knew the risk of childhood obesity doubles in the children of women who were obese in the first trimester. I have written at length as to why people get obese. When we consider adults, this usually happens in their 30s and 40s. Consider most people's experience. As a teenager and young adult, we may not pay much attention at all as to what we eat or how often we eat. Our diet seems to be controlled by hunger, just like it has been for people in the last 5,000 years. We usually ate when we were hungry and food was available, and did not eat when we were not hungry. Most of the time, our weight changed very little, maybe a pound or two a year. This happened, though we paid little attention to diet. As time went on, we noticed that perhaps we were gaining a little weight and maybe decided to eat a little less and exercise a little more. In almost everyone, this did not work, and we slowly gained weight. Eventually, when we got to about age 50, almost half of us had obesity, prediabetes, or type 2 diabetes. I go into detail in my previous book, but essentially we develop insulin resistance, which leads to obesity, which eventually leads to diabetes. It appears that for many years we had a weight set point. This allowed us to control our weight without thinking and just ate when we were hungry. The weight set point is not just a protein, but more of a combination of various processes in your body. This includes your metabolic set point and changes in your brain that determine hunger. This set point slowly rises along with insulin resistance, such that we get fat. Although I do not know the specifics, I am confident in saying this is a result of many epigenetic changes resulting from the diet. I do not need to know the details to tell you to change your diet. It appears these epigenetic changes can slowly be reversed, such that some people may be able to establish the historic normal pattern of eating when you get hungry. If you once developed insulin resistance, you may have to have a lower carbohydrate maintenance diet. If not, you may just be able to return to the normal maintenance diet. In any case, although it is possible, it is difficult to change the metabolic set point as we must change the epigenetics. In the Dutch famine, the fetuses with later exposure to famine seem to have developed epigenetic changes in their weight set point such that they remain smaller throughout their lives. I doubt if they stayed on a special diet through their 20s and 40s, yet did not succumb to a slowly rising weight like many others on the Western diet. The ones exposed to famine in an early trimester were not smaller when born and had a lifetime higher risk of obesity than their siblings. We now realize that during embryonic growth, nutrition can affect subsequent phenotypes. There are a lot of epigenetic changes taking place in utero and the first couple years of life. We also see that this is a time when many of the epigenetic marks remain throughout life. The weight set point appears to be one of these. We have an epidemic of obesity in children that we did not have in the previous 5,000 years, so that now obesity comes earlier, as does type 2 diabetes in children. Although it may have taken adults 20 years on a poor diet to change their weight set point, epigenetic changes seem to occur more rapidly early in life, and diet may more rapidly stimulate the insulin resistance to develop. We have obese mothers. Their intrauterine environment is different than normal weight mothers. The baby is born and breastfed for a year or two. As we will see in the next chapter, the obese mother's breast milk is also different. Eventually, the child eats the same thing as the rest of the family. If the family is obese, this is an indication of insulin resistance and a poor diet. Now the infant is being exposed to the same nutritional conditions. We have already exposed the cells to an intrauterine environment that may promote epigenetic changes that affect later weight. The breast milk may have induced other changes, and now we have an insulin resistance promoting diet in the family while the child grows up. We are slowly inducing obesity throughout the population. This is not occurring through changes in the DNA, but rather epigenetic changes. The more obese people you have at younger ages, the more obese mothers. Obese mothers may contribute to children with a higher chance at obesity. Unless we can get a diet change, you can see how the obesity rate is going to slowly rise as it has been in the last 100 years. This sounds hopeless, but it is not. I have a book for adults and this is going to be a book about children. After weaning, children eat the same as adults. I will treat them a little differently as, unlike adults, children are continuing to grow, and I do not advise prolonged fasting or the ketogenic diet in children. The Dutch famine was a one-time event that allowed us to see that early diet promoted epigenetic changes, perhaps for a lifetime. No one is going to go through that again. Now I will concentrate on what we can do while the fetus is in the uterus during the first year of life, when the child starts eating at the adult table, and when the child is a teenager still living at home. When they leave home, we are going to make them responsible for their own diet. Of course, we will start with breast milk. Throughout history, this has been the main source of nutrition for the first couple years of life, and as we would expect, has an extensive effect on epigenetics and diet. Before I can do that, I must teach you a little about omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids. By now, everyone has heard of them and knows a little about them. I must level the playing field for everyone, so bear with me on the next chapter. Then I will get to breast milk.